You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
On today's podcast, we've got a little bit better look at who Arkansas could play in Hoover. Christina Long will be in studio to talk to me about that. Also, Anthony Christensen will be in here. He'll talk about listening to John Calipari speak at last week's Razorback Roadshow, Boogie Flan's transfer to Florida, and much more. But first, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Just a day into the SEC tournament, we've already got rain that's postponed the schedule. Texas A&M and Mississippi State unable to play last night. This is not going to affect Arkansas as of right now. Now, of course, there could be more rain that comes through Alabama that alters the schedule further. As of right now, Arkansas is still going to play at 3 o'clock on Friday, and the Razorbacks are going to play either Florida or Ole Miss. Those teams are going to play in the late game tonight at the Hoover Met. Of course, Arkansas played them both earlier this year, lost a series at Florida, won a series at Ole Miss. Florida beat South Carolina yesterday 11-3 in the first round of the tournament, and both of those teams are going to throw their aces tonight, Liam Peterson for Florida and Hunter Elliott for Ole Miss. It would have been surprising if South Carolina would have beaten – maybe I should back up. It would have been surprising if South Carolina would have advanced very far in the tournament based on how they played this year. I think anytime you've got just a one-off situation in baseball, you never know what's going to happen. South Carolina, they loaded the bases in the first inning against Florida yesterday. Florida got out of the jam. Florida ends up, kind of pulling away a little bit. South Carolina made it interesting, and then Florida had a big four-run eighth inning that ended up allowing them to win that game 11-3. So these are the two teams that we thought Arkansas would probably face on Friday, Florida or Ole Miss. And if you're Arkansas, you're going to throw your ace against their number two group. And I would think you probably got to like that matchup. Even though it didn't work for them against Tennessee last week, this is a different situation. And I would think Zach Root wants to come back this week against whoever they play and have a bounce-back performance, because he had been pitching well up until he had that bad fourth inning against Tennessee.
Yeah, it's interesting with the way that the format has changed, where now you can kind of, a top four seed like Arkansas can kind of treat this like a regular weekend series in terms of its pitching staff and its starting rotation. And for a team like Arkansas now that is having some concerns with its starting pitching, and it's been kind of up and down, a little inconsistent throughout that, rotation, it's kind of nice now that they get kind of this little tune-up before, I shouldn't say the real postseason, but the real postseason starts. Because now you're in a situation where, okay, this could actually be a good thing. Where it used to be, gosh, we have to use these guys. It could be shorter rest. We don't know how long we're going to be here. This is such a burden on a team that's trying to make a deep NCAA tournament run. Now it's like, okay, it's still not a priority. The SEC tournament is not a priority. But for, somebody like Zach Root that's coming off a rough go, can kind of try to sort of tune up, have a game like this. To kind of help, and it's not going to disturb, in theory, the NCAA tournament kind of prep.
I had a conversation with Matt Hobbs yesterday, Arkansas's pitching coach, about the tournament, about how they're going to approach this weekend. And I'll have more of that on our website as the week goes along. But basically, he said they're not going to pull the reins back on anybody this week. They did that with Hagan Smith last year. And I asked him, I said, well, why was it that way with him last year? And he said that he felt with Hagan last year, it wasn't so much about the number of innings that he had pitched so much as it was the number of stressful situations that he had pitched in. I mean, you think about, they beat Auburn in like a 1-0 game, and he goes 6-something innings into that game. Or, A&M, when they play down there in College Station, I think it's scoreless whenever he leaves the game in the 7th or the 8th inning. And there were just a lot of those performances or a lot of those games whenever he was pitching last year where – he was in just if he had one mistake, they might lose the game. And so they limited him to 36 pitches. And Matt told me, he said, if I had to go back and do it again, I probably just wouldn't have pitched him. Mm. He said, because it's hard to kind of turn it off for a week and then turn it back on. He didn't think it was necessarily that way with Hagen last year because, you know, the K-State game at the regional, he did pitch pretty well for four innings, and then he had a bad fifth inning, and that's what, you know, basically cost Arkansas that game, and I would argue the entire regional. But, you know, the plan this week is to – they've got momentum coming out of Tennessee, and they're going to have their pitchers go out there and treat this like any other weekend.
Yeah, it's interesting how that kind of – can inform that level of stress, those kinds of situations you can put in, how much that can affect, you know, kind of weeks going forward. Like, I wouldn't have really thought about that as something that, you know, obviously pitching can be very mental, but I just wouldn't have thought that that would be something that, you know, a coach would look back on even a year later and kind of change his perspective on. And I think when you look at somebody like Zach Root, this was something interesting during Tennessee series last weekend. When he gave up, I think it was that early home run he allowed, I was like, I worry about Zach Root in these situations because he's kind of, I've talked to people about this in several different sports, about people that are, you know, when I remember talking about it with Devo Davis sometimes in basketball, like Devo would make a mistake or something and really have a big reaction. And he was always kind of, you know, he was kind of volatile. And I don't see Zach Root as like a Devo Davis, but I think Zach Root, he talks to himself a lot. He like smells the ball. He's kind of like a head case, you know, in a good, like it can be a really good thing, but I worry about him when he makes a mistake. You know, I don't know the guy. I don't know his psychology, but it's just interesting. I worry about him when he kind of makes a mistake about is, you know, I'd be interested on Matt Hobbs's perspective on something like that for him, what he sees from, you know, how Zach Root moves on from mistakes or how he kind of talks to himself or what he, you know, literally how he talks to himself. He does speak to himself, but also what he thinks about, you know, when he's trying to get through situations like that, because he has gotten out of situations, you know, it's not like he just falls apart anytime something bad happens, but it's something that I worry about sometimes when I watch him, because sometimes I wonder about people having big reactions and does it kind of hurt you going forward, if that makes any sense at all.
No, I think there is something to, and Bubba talked about this on Monday, about how Tennessee, they are a reflection of their head coach, who he, you know, wears his emotions on his sleeve, and it's a team that kind of plays with their emotions on their sleeve, and that can be good for you, but it can also be bad for you, you know, because it can take your attention away from, I mean, baseball, I've always said this, is it's such a demanding game that, you know, unless you're out there and you're in it, I don't know that you quite understand the just emotional, mental pull that it has on you. And, you know, if you're wasting your time on all this other stuff, you know, I think it takes away from you know, what you've got left in the tank at the end of the game. So, I mean, I think they're, you know, with Root, he's, like you said, he's pitched through it some, but then there have been a lot of times where it just totally falls apart on him. Like the other day against Tennessee, what did he go through, three innings in 31 pitches?
I think so.
And then he's got a 37-pitch inning in the fourth, and he can't get out of it. Just two outs. And so I'll be interested to see how he bounces back this week, because I did think he was pitching well. He had the eight innings against Texas. He had, what did he go, about six-something against LSU? I mean, he was competing well against Kate Anderson from LSU. In fact, they had the lead, I think, when Zach went out of the game. And so I feel like the other day it probably was a little bit of something that was going on with him. And I feel like there's probably a lot of – that's a really good team, a really good lineup that they were facing. I think Tennessee's best lineup they faced all year.
Yeah. It's interesting how we've talked about kind of the – I just realized every time you've thrown to me, I've started with, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's it is interesting. There's so much interesting stuff.
That's going to be Christina's new podcast.
That's my thing.
It's
yes,
interesting. It's with interesting. Christina Long.
But it is interesting when we kind of I always like to look back after a series and think about how we talked about it in the lead up, because it felt like, especially kind of late in the season when they were facing all these kind of top teams, we would talk about, this is the best staff they're going to face. The last one was really good, but this is the best staff. And it kind of felt like it's interesting how the course of a season can tell you, you know, can change your perspective on teams as you kind of see them go through the year. You know, we might have circled different teams before the season, different matchups, different lineups. There might have been a totally different lineup that we picked as that's going to be the best one that they face before the season, and then you get to it, and even over the course of the season, you know, after 3 weeks of SEC play, we might have picked out a different one as what it was going to be. So it's I was going to say it's interesting.
You know what's happened to you? Is that it's gotten in your head, like whenever somebody told Sam Pittman that he says things of that nature,
and now
to be
just,
perfectly honest with you.
Now all I can say is it's interesting.
And you can tell whenever he's about to say that now, that he kind of will stop himself.
Yeah, and I just did it.
And that's what's going to happen to you.
Yeah, it's so interesting.
It is always. There's never an uninteresting day around our studio here. You look at some of the postseason projections that have come out. Right now, Baseball America and D1 Baseball both have Arkansas as a number two national seed, and both of them have KU coming here as the number two seed. That's not a surprise. We'll dig into this a little bit more next week, later this week. But, you know, I've gone through and looked at, you know, analyzed all the data about the teams that have been sent here. And one of the things, you know, like two things jump out. Number one is that Arkansas, whether it be here in Fayetteville or elsewhere, there's almost always a Big 12 team mm-hmm. in their regional. And then when they are at home, there's almost always a power conference team that is either from a state that borders Arkansas or a state that borders a border state. So like K-State came here last year, for instance. KU could potentially come here. Nebraska in 2021 came here. And so Kansas would not surprise me at all. I was very interested to see, you know, what they thought about the 3 and 4 seeds, and all this can obviously change. D1 Baseball right now says Creighton would be the number 3 seed. You know, Arkansas, I think they'd be okay if Creighton started at their ballpark and they ended at Creighton's ballpark mm-hmm. up in Omaha. D1 Baseball says Wright State would be the number 4 seed.
Is that in Ohio?
I believe so.
I feel like the 4 seed is always like kind of just a wild card. I always think about like NJIT, and I love whenever I'm talking to people that are not from here or maybe are not really big on college baseball, whenever I'm explaining kind of the Arkansas baseball experience, I talk about the NJIT mm-hmm. story and how they were out in the hog pen and people kind of became friends with them and they made that video thanking Arkansas. I love talking about the NJIT thing from a few years ago.
Sydney, will you pull up Wright State's fight song? We'll play this here in just a second. I want people to hear a Wright State's fight song and tell you and see what you think it sounds like. Baseball America has Virginia as the number 3 seed. That would be very interesting because Virginia started the season, I think they were top 5. I think they might have been like number 3 or number 4 mm-hmm. in the preseason. Everybody had high expectations for Virginia this year. And there's even some thought about whether or not they even make it into the tournament. I think they're a bubble team. They had a series that was scheduled at Florida State about a month or so ago, maybe a month and a half, and there was a shooting at the Florida State campus that like the day before the series was set to begin. And they actually canceled the Virginia-Florida State series, never played it. And for Virginia, that was a huge, you know, I mean, obviously, they were well within their rights not to play that. I don't want anybody to get that mistaken. But for Virginia, it was a big missed opportunity to potentially have a resume-building series against Florida State. A lot of thought about Brian O'Connor, and we've talked to some people on our show before in the last couple of weeks about what Mississippi State might do with their head coaching job, and they think Brian O'Connor might be in the mix there.
How long
there.
Has he been there?
Long time. Okay. Long time. I mean, I would say going on 20 years, if not a little bit longer. I mean, he was coaching Virginia when Arkansas played them in the 09 College World Series, the night that Brett Eibner hit that home run, and he'd been there for a little bit at that time. So Virginia, they've got them potentially as the number 3 seed. They've got Central Connecticut, who you didn't reference them. You referenced New Jersey Tech. Yeah. But Central Connecticut was another one of those teams that came in from the Northeast a couple of years before that. And they had the big, you know, party weekend out in the hog pen. So, in fact, I think there was even some thought that one of their players might end up – that was on that team in 19 was going to potentially transfer here.
Really?
It never ended up materializing, but I think there was some thought from that.
That's so funny.
That year. Do we have the fight song pulled up?
I think we do.
Okay, I want you to listen to Wright State's fight song and tell me what you think it sounds like.
Okay. That's so funny because
they stole Arkansas's fight song.
There's so many fight songs, alma maters, that are all the same, but I think every time I hear Arkansas's fight song, I've thought, you know, I really don't feel like I hear this other places. You know, there's a lot of, I think KU and Mizzou have the same alma mater. Like, it's a pretty common one. You know, there's lots of, like, interesting ones where it's kind of the same tunes that everybody recycles. But I've always felt like Arkansas's was, like, pretty unique, actually, and I haven't heard it from any other schools. That's crazy.
Yeah, I believe that somebody's going to, I'm sure somebody will email us if I'm wrong about this. I believe that Arkansas had a band director in the 70s who wrote that fight song.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
And so, I mean, that is an Arkansas fight. It's not like Arkansas went and took Wright State's fights on.
Yeah.
So I guess.
Wow. Who had it first? Who wore it better?
Like, if Wright State advances from the regional, maybe they get to keep the fight song.
I was going to say, how much will they allow them to play that song, like, throughout that regional?
Well, it's going to be so weird because, you know, what they do, the regionals are so much different because, you know, you can't have too much of a home field advantage.
Right.
So they're going to play their fight.
You can't troll with music.
Like,
that
if they hit a home run, they're going to play their fight song. Well, it's going to be Arkansas's fight song.
That's so funny.
Yeah. People are going to be very confused.
Yeah. That's awesome.
People who don't know that Wright State has the same fight song as Arkansas. Our high school alma mater, I learned many, many years later, is what Oklahoma State calls the waving song.
Okay.
It's kind of like I don't know if it's a fight song for them or what it is, but it's something they play after all their touchdowns.
Oh, interesting.
And that was our high school alma mater.
The wave. Okay, wait. Interesting. Because Kansas does the, like, wave the wheat when they score a touchdown. I hated it.
Different.
It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen, but.
We played a team in high school who their alma mater was O Christmas Tree.
No way.
Yeah. But
it
was Paris High School, but they changed
that song is really slow.
They changed it to O Paris High. So
it was O Christmas.
And then our band, being the smart alecks they were, printed out the lyrics to O Christmas Tree and sang along.
That's really funny.
I don't know how we got here, but
Wright State is projected to maybe come to this regional. Guarantee you they probably
won't. High school fight song was Wisconsin's fight song.
Is it really the same? That's so funny.
On
I mean,
Wisconsin.
My junior high's logo is the same as the Wisconsin logo, but blue.
There's not a lot of uniqueness out there. There's
not.
A lot of, like, remember when Missouri came after Green Forest High School for using their logo?
Yeah.
Except they had made it red.
Mm-hmm. It's really funny. So, Bentonville used to use it, but I don't know if Missouri came after them or if they stopped wanting to pay, if they were paying for it and stopped wanting to or what, because then they got the tiger they have now.
A tiger's a tiger, in my
There's
opinion.
There's too many of them, I think.
Yeah. I always love the schools where, like, the high schools where, you know, like, you're able to immediately identify, hey, that's them. And they've done this, and they've done a great job of coming up with their own brand. The school I think of the best, and we're going to get back to talking about the Razorbacks here in just a second, I promise. Broken Arrow High School in Oklahoma, where the A is actually a broken
it's
arrow.
Cool.
That's a really cool little
unique
deal. All right, back to baseball, since that's what we're talking about today. You look at the SEC tournament yesterday. Alabama beat Missouri, so Missouri has finally been put out of its misery for this season. Its baseball team, boy, it was a rough year for them. They finished 3-28 against SEC teams. They'll always have the College Station weekend, which will go down. I don't know that there's ever going to be a more surprising series outcome than Missouri sweeping Texas A&M.
I need a 30-for-30 on that in the future.
Yeah. You
I
may
need
get
to know
one.
How it happened.
You're probably going to be flipping around SEC Network in about 10 years, and there's going to be a
that SEC
hour-long
storied.
Yeah, SEC storied.
An elderly Carrick Jackson is reminiscing.
The week that we avoided 0-30. So Missouri's gone. Alabama has moved on. Alabama, they're still fighting a little bit for their regional hosting lives. You know, I thought they were in a good position to maybe, if they went on a run last week, to be maybe the 8 national seed. I don't think they're going to be a national seed anymore, a top 8 national seed anymore. All the regional hosts are national seeds, but they're probably in a pretty good position to host. I think they'd feel better if they got one more win at the SEC tournament. Kentucky, I think they're going to be sweating it a little bit when the selection show comes on Monday. They lost yesterday to OU. Sooners got a little bit of revenge for being swept up in Lexington a couple of weeks ago. And then mentioned South Carolina lost to Florida, Texas A&M, and Mississippi State, the other one. Which, by the time you hear this podcast, that game will probably be over because I think it started at about 9 o'clock this morning at the Hoover Met. And then the 5-8 seeds, they get going in the second round a little bit later today. I think for these top 4 seeds, and we touched on this, the format change, you just treat it like a weekend. And I think it's so much better than the old format where I think you probably kind of dreaded going to Hoover, even if you were a top 4 seed because you could play as many as 5 games in 5 days. I think now the top 4 seeds especially go down there and it's like, hey, you know, why not go all out and try to win this thing?
Yeah, I think it's the perspective has changed on it a little bit. I think it's still not a priority. It was interesting when we would talk post game in the Tennessee series to some of the players. You were asking a little bit about, okay, you guys have, you know, you've clinched the top four, you've clinched the double bye, blah blah blah, and like David Horn had things to say about it, and the players were like, "What? we didn't know about that." You know, it's obviously not something they're talking to the team about, which makes sense. They're usually not.
I don't think
they
had talked to the team about it on Saturday. I think they've talked to him about it now.
Sure, but it was interesting how like. You know, Dave Van Horn had the answers he could give about, yeah, we care about the SEC tournament. And the players were like, huh? Which I thought was pretty funny. But I do think it is different. Now it is not actively possibly hurting your team. It's now just kind of another thing you can do that. Yeah, now it's like, okay, why not? You know, we want to play well, whatever. It's not so much, okay, we want to get out of here quickly, but we can't, you know, throw games. So what are we going to do?
I like it. I'm looking forward to going down there and covering it this week because I've always kind of dreaded it because you just don't know. Like,
right.
Are you going to be here for 3 days? You could be there for five. And it's still a little bit of that. You know, am I going to be here for one night? Am I going to be here for two or three? But it's different. It's just got a totally different feel to it.
Do you know if the ACC still does their crazy pod tournament?
I don't believe so.
I was going to say, I wonder what their format, it's changed since they've added those.
I think they've gotten rid of that.
Okay. Cause that was crazy.
They play in Durham.
Yeah.
Where you hit the bowl and win steak or you hit the grass and
like
win salad.
Yeah.
That's true.
it's crazy.
You hit the bowl and you win a steak. I wonder is that in play for the college games?
I don't think
so. Like it is for the Durham Bulls.
I don't think so.
Well, it should be.
I agree.
You hit the bowl, you win a steak, you hit the grass, you win a sound. Also, speaking of conference tournaments, now this is very interesting moving forward for the SEC. The SEC is under contract with Hoover through 2028, but there's been a lot of thought about does the SEC tournament eventually move to Arlington? Big 12 just announced this week they are moving out of Arlington, their conference tournament. And they're moving to Surprise, Arizona, to the spring training facility that's shared by the Royals and the Rangers.
That's so interesting. I mean, I guess that makes sense. A lot of their teams are kind of out that way now.
But I think they're trying to have more of a westward influence, you know, if you will. But I think what's happened with the Big 12 tournament in Arlington is that it's just been too cavernous. Mm. You know, like you're playing in front of a couple thousand people. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think the SEC... I think people would fill it up. I think they would flock to Dallas to go to that tournament. You wouldn't deal with the rain delays that you deal with in Hoover.
Because it's pretty much every year it feels like there's...
It's going to be interesting when that contract runs out. Do they... Seriously, 28 is what year they're with Hoover. And I don't know if the Big 12, if they're going to Surprise next year or if next year is their last year in Arlington. But basically, Arlington is open if the SEC wants to go there. Now, that was kind of one of the – and I don't know if the SEC wanted to leave Hoover. Right there next to the SEC offices is where they've had the – and the city of Hoover, they've made a ton of modifications to that ballpark and the surrounding area to try to make the SEC happy and never want to leave there. What they don't have is a roof. And what they do have is bad weather in late May. So that's, to me, that was an event that happened this week that I'm like, I wonder how this plays out in the future.
Yeah, I hadn't seen that. That's definitely something to watch because it would make sense for them to go to Arlington.
Well, I mean, it's Dallas is one of those areas where it doesn't matter if you're an Ole Miss grad or an Arkansas grad or an Alabama grad. You got a ton of people who are in that area because that's where the jobs are. And it's also a town that a lot of people enjoy just going to and spending time there. And so I think people would flock to Arlington. And I think the SEC baseball tournament, I'm thinking big here, but it wouldn't surprise me if you've got an SEC, the right matchup at the SEC tournament on the right day of the week, you know, say like a Saturday semifinal game. If you got LSU playing Arkansas in a semifinal game at the SEC tournament at Globe Life, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see 35,000 people in that ballpark. I really wouldn't.
Yeah, which is it's a good point about the Dallas of it all, about people like to go to that area. People like to spend time in Fort Worth. It is a fun place people look forward to going to. That's part of why when Arkansas plays these early season games there's so many Arkansas fans, and a lot of the fans, you know, Arkansas fans I think travel the best out of the teams that they've had at that event, but
not even close.
But fans do come, you know, like it is a draw for sure. And I think there's not nearly as many people getting excited to take the family to Hoover for the weekend.
Well, here's what I think about the way the early season series there work is that a lot of times it's like a big basketball weekend. Mm-hmm. Like I remember being, you know, like I think the last 2 years, they might have been playing Missouri in Fayetteville both times, which is really strange that it worked out that way. But those were big basketball games. And you still had 15 to 20,000 people there, mostly in red. And that's during basketball season.
Yeah.
So imagine like once everybody's focus has turned to baseball,
right.
when basketball is over, you know, LSU and Texas, they played at, it's not Minute Maid anymore in Houston. They changed the name this year, but the Astros ballpark, they played there a year or two ago and they had like 27,000, I think, in the ballpark for an early March game. Again, imagine if it's a bigger, like, hey, Texas and LSU are playing for an SEC championship in Dallas.
Yeah.
What might that ballpark look like? So something worth watching. Speaking of Arlington, it was announced recently Arkansas going to play there next year. Of course, we all knew that. But what we found out was the opponents are going to be Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, and TCU. And then, as we've reported previously, they're going to stay a day later and play Tarleton State in Arlington. So four Texas Oklahoma State, you're not a Texas team, but four of those regional teams that they're going to play in Arlington next year.
Mm-hmm. And Oklahoma State, who they play all the time, especially in Arlington.
Yeah.
And TCU has been there a lot, too, especially recently. Texas Tech, have they been there often? I don't remember Arkansas playing them there.
They played them there the first time.
Okay.
The first game that Arkansas played at that ballpark was against Texas Tech. It started late. It was in 2021. It started late. The whole thing started a day late because there was ice in Dallas that had kind of shut down everything. And then the game started late because a game before it had gone long. And it was like this all-night thriller.
Mm-hmm.
I think Arkansas won 13-9.
Oh,
and that
wow.
was the 2021 team that was so good. And that was the weekend where you started to see, hey, they got a little bit of a knack for coming up with big plays in the late innings. And so that's the only time they played Texas Tech there, though. So I'm looking forward to that because not only is it in Arlington, it's the season opener next year.
They're
going to open the season down there. So their first four games will be at the Rangers ballpark.
Yeah. Which, did they do that last year? Or because they've done that before, but they don't do it every time.
21 and 23.
Okay.
Yeah, the last 2 years have been the second weekend of the season. All right, so we'll know by tomorrow's show when we talk to Bubba, who Arkansas is going to play on Friday, or we hope to. Hopefully there's no more storms in Birmingham that delay this thing. But Florida and Ole Miss scheduled to play tonight at the Hoover Met. We appreciate Christina for being here. Always interesting when she's in. And when we come back, Anthony Christensen is going to join us. We'll talk Razorback basketball. But first, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas, or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. I want to tell you, too, you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at WholeHogSports.com, most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports. Award-winning team of reporters and photographers will give you the most trusted Razorback news with analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at WholeHogSports.com. You can also subscribe to our podcast. You can find us on Apple by searching Whole Hog Sports. You can find us on our Whole Hog Sports video page on YouTube. We post the podcast video version to YouTube and our social media pages at Twitter and Facebook each day. Anthony Christensen is in here now. Anthony spent some time on the road last week listening to John Calipari in Memphis and in Little Rock as part of the One Razorback Roadshow. We'll talk to him about what he learned listening to Cal during those trips here in just a minute. But, of course, the big news, and Ethan and I talked about this yesterday, is that Boogie Fland has decided to transfer to Florida. Really no surprise. And I referenced yesterday something that Cal told you when you were in Memphis, which was the day that Boogie had withdrawn from the NBA draft, and you asked for his reaction, and I thought it was really telling at the time that he said, I haven't spoken to him about this. And when he said that, to me, it's like, okay, he's gone. Mm-hmm. Because if you're going to withdraw from the draft and you have got any inclination about going back to the school that you were with, you're talking to your head coach before you make that decision. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he hadn't, I mean, that told me that, you know, hey, that separate or that relationship, there's a separation there, and both of these sides are going to go their own way.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I wasn't surprised, you know, that he ended up at Florida. I mean, that was kind of the smoke all along, that it seemed like that's the most likely landing spot that he was going to land. I know that there was maybe some interest from North Carolina, maybe something from St. John's, but nothing ever seemed to be on the same level as Florida. But yeah, going back to that, you know, I also thought that when he withdrew from the draft, even before I asked John Calipari about it, I figured that meant he was not going to be coming back, because I don't think he expected to be a 2-year college player. I don't think John Calipari expected him to be a 2-year college player. And that's just kind of sometimes the way that goes. I think his thumb injury really was a big impact on his draft stock. So I think that's a big reason for that. But yeah, no, not surprising to me at all that he didn't come back to Arkansas.
Is he Walter Clayton? I mean, is that what he's going to Florida to be? Is that the role that he's trying to fill there?
It could be. You know, it's going to be an interesting dynamic at Florida. I mean, Florida for me right now, and I haven't sat down and done this yet, but if I'm putting together my preseason AP poll, I mean, Florida is definitely in the top 5 to 10 now. You know, I mean, when you look at the pieces Florida's added, I mean, Xavier Lee from Princeton is awesome. Obviously, Boogie Fland and him kind of making that backcourt partnership is going to be really interesting to see. You know, how do those guys play off of each other? So that'll be a lot of fun. I mean, you've got Ruben Chinyelu coming back. You've got the possibility of Alex Condon coming back. Thomas Haug is already back. Micah Hanglockton is also going to be back. So, I mean, Florida is going to be loaded again. So, I mean, that's a team that, at least on paper, looks like it's going to be able to at least compete for, you know, try to go back to back. So it'll be interesting. I'm not sure that I think he's going to fill the Walter Clayton role. It'll be interesting. I mean, they're kind of different players than just kind of the way they play. I think Boogie's more of a pass-oriented player than Walter Clayton. And that's not mm-hmm. to say Walter Clayton isn't.
He's a scorer.
You know, he's very good. And obviously he's played himself, you know, into that first round NBA draft kind of conversation for a reason. And, you know, I don't know that I see him filling that role, but I do think, you know, Florida's got, you know, one of the best coaching staffs in the country. I mean, Todd Golden is obviously what Todd Golden is. They just added Dan Klotsky, I think is his name, from the head coach at NYU, just one of the best Division III coaches in the country. And I apologize if I got the name wrong. It's not something I've thought about in a long time, but they lost some coaching staff members. You know, one of them took the job at Columbia, the other took the job at Campbell. So, you know, you wonder how that is going to play into things. How are they going to kind of reload from a staffing standpoint? But then they go out and they get in guys like that who have, you know, competed for national titles at a lower level. So it's Florida's going to be good. I don't know exactly how the pieces come together yet, but on paper, I mean, this Florida team looks like it's going to be quite stacked.
You know, UConn won back-to-back championships, but there's a lot of instances in the last 10 years or so where a team has won a championship and then they just can't find that magic the next year, especially in the portal era where you're, you know, totally overhauling your roster each season. So,
oh, yeah, for sure. It happened to UConn this year.
Florida, they're the team that's got the target on their back next year. I think that they were able this year because they were more of kind – I feel like they're more kind of a curiosity for a lot of this year. Now, next year, they're the team that – they go into the arena, and that's the game you circle on your schedule. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see if they can handle the pressure that comes along with being the defending champion. All right, I want to talk about this. Matt Norlander, who is a college basketball reporter for CBS, yesterday on the Ion College Basketball podcast, he had to say this about Arkansas and the players that were still waiting for a decision from in terms of the NBA draft. This is what he had to say. Very, very interesting comments.
he did not have a standout showing at the combine, so we wait on RJ Lewis. A couple more names for you, GP. Duthiero and Carter Knox, I think they both wind up back at Arkansas. Maybe Knox got a little bit more positive feedback than was expected, but I guess we wait and see on that. I mentioned Condon.
Okay, so this is interesting to me because I've been under the impression, maybe falsely, that it was way more likely that Carter Knox would come back to Arkansas than do Thero, because I thought Thero would get better feedback from the NBA. We'll see. We've got, what, about a week left before they got to make their decisions?
May
28th. When you heard this,
yeah, I always,
surprise?
A little bit, yeah. I love their podcast. I listen to it all the time. Every time there's a new episode, I always throw it on. I very entertaining podcast. I got the chance to meet Matt Norlander in Providence. Awesome guy. Haven't met Gary Parrish, but to their comments, I still think I would be surprised if a Duthiero came back. I think it just, to me, it seems like this is as high as his stock is going to be, at least as a college player. And that's not to say I can't be wrong, because I've been wrong a lot in the past. So, you know, if he comes back and you know, continues the improvement that he's kind of shown throughout his college career, you know, he could, you know, continue to grow on that. But you see fewer and fewer four-year college players get drafted, at least in that first round, which, again, you know, there are exceptions to that rule. I mean, you look at Neek Clifford, who's a five-year college guy and was a borderline All-American for Colorado State. He's getting some lottery hype. So, I mean, there are always going to be exceptions to the rule, but I still think this is probably, at least in terms of what we know right now, this is probably what or the best that Adu Thero's draft stock is going to be. And like I said, not that it can't change, but I would still think I would be surprised if he came back, especially when Adu, I think it was last week or some at some point during the draft process, he said, you know, the door to return to college isn't closed, but he was certainly leaning more towards staying in the draft. So it's certainly possible that he does. I still think that Adu Thero is going to remain in the draft. If you're asking me to make a prediction, I would say I lean much more towards him staying in the draft more than him coming back, but it's certainly not impossible that he does. Carter Knox, I would be pretty surprised if he did stay in the draft. I would be surprised if he didn't come back to Arkansas. I've always kind of read it more as him kind of going in and getting that feedback. And, you know, if he gets the feedback he wants, then sure, he'll, you know, stay in the draft. When he first committed, I talked to his high school coach, and he was like, Carter does not need to be a one-and-done guy. That's not his primary focus. He wants to go in and he wants to get better. Obviously, he wants to get to the NBA. What college basketball player doesn't want to get to the NBA? But, you know, it's all about, you know, his steady improvements and things along those lines. And, you know, he's gotten some positive feedback, obviously. So I think that's good for him, but I would be pretty surprised if he didn't come back to Arkansas.
Dalton Connect is another one who stayed, yes, in college for, what, 5 years?
5 years.
And ended up being a first-round pick of the Lakers.
Yes, absolutely. And there's a little bit of, you know, nuance in there. Obviously, that was a little bit of a weaker draft class than this one. I think this draft class is much deeper than that draft class.
So what
class
about next
was,
year's draft class?
That one's interesting.
Does Thero help his? Here's the thing about Thero. I don't think he's got I don't think he's got the jump shot that a lot of the NBA teams,
yeah, and that's kind of the
and
big,
scouts
the
want
big
to
concern,
see.
Yeah.
So can he come back and improve that, his, yeah, jump shot, and then maybe in a different draft cycle next year improve his stock?
Potentially. It's certainly not impossible. I mean, it's really early to start.
Because you saw a lot of improvement from him from his last year at Kentucky, yeah, to this last year that he had at Arkansas.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, so it's a little early to be thinking like, okay, what's the next draft stock going to look or draft class going to look like?
Is it too early?
Sometimes.
No, I mean this genuinely. Is it too early whenever you are in the process right now? Like, I mean,
that's fair.
Are you and your people that you have surrounded yourself, are you looking at what next year might look like, mm-hmm, and letting that influence what your decision is going to be between now and the 28th?
I'm sure it's a conversation, and it's one that probably should be happening, at least in my mind. You know, I you know, when you look at the potential of next year's draft class. I mean, you've got, you know, some guys up at the top who are pretty much, you know, your locks to go in some the lottery in some form. You know, AJ DeBanza or Nate Ament or, you know, guys like that. Darren Peterson over at Kansas as well. So I mean, you're going to have guys like that, you know, who are just at the top, just your one and done prospects. You know, who are always going to be there. After that, it's a little different because then you get guys like, you know, where does Boogie Fland kind of fall in that after a year at Florida? You know, there's a lot of different variables that can make, you know, looking towards next year, like, you know, okay, I'm going to go back to college and improve my draft stock, but who else is going to emerge in those kinds of conversations? Because I mean, when you bring up Dalton Kinect, nobody was talking about Dalton Kinect in a first round draft standpoint, you know, when he was going from Northern Colorado to Tennessee. So, and obviously that's a much different scenario because he was going from, you know, the Big West.
He was going from obscurity to the top.
Are they the Big West? I don't know. That's not important, but yeah. So
they're out there.
Yes, they're out there. Northern Colorado and to Tennessee. So, I mean, it's a different conversation, but you don't know who's going to emerge in those kinds of conversations. There's a lot of, you know, different things. You look at, you know, players transferring up who are going to the power conference level for the first time. How are they going to do in those environments and different things like that. You have international prospects as well. So it's a risk. It's a conversation that I think should and probably is happening. So there are those kinds of conversations, but yeah, it's difficult to map for sure.
Hey, quick aside, did you see that Zakai Ziegler is suing for another year of eligibility? Yes. Hadn't he been there for like 10 years already? Put the 10 in Tennessee.
4 years of college, played over 20 minutes a game in each of those 4 years. So, yeah, that's an interesting one. You know, because if you grant him a fifth year, then it's probably going to have to be just universal fifth year.
I think it's inevitable eventually that you're going to have a five-year eligibility window because COVID changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
It changed everything. When you've got all these players now that they get 5 years, well, why did they get 5 years? Why did they get 5 years of now when it's coupled with NIL, they got 5 years of earning potential, and now you're going to limit me to 4 years of earning potential. I just feel like that was a big Pandora's box that got open that the NCAA or this college sports commissioner, whoever the hell's in charge in 5 years, they're not going to be able to close that thing.
Yeah. No, it doesn't seem like anybody's in charge as it is. But no, that's an interesting thing to kind of monitor and keep an eye on because if, like I said, if Zakai Ziegler gets a fifth year, then I think everybody's going to end up getting a fifth year. And I also do end up thinking that's going to be just the way it is at some point. And then while this is going on, while he's, you know, suing to get a fifth year, Ali Khalifa at Louisville, who's, you know, been in college 5 years, but he's only played three. He's had some medical redshirt, and he redshirted last year. You know, and his waiver just got denied. So that's, you know, a weird one. Which I'm of the opinion that waiver should be appealed and approved.
I'm sure it will be.
I was shocked that it was denied to begin with because they accept every waiver, it seems. But
you know who's the happiest about what's going on in college sports right now? The attorneys.
Oh yeah, they're living it up.
I mean,
they're staying busy.
You could start a law firm right now and specialize in college athlete.
You want to do that?
Give me a few years. Yeah. I'm going to need to go do something first. Maybe in a few.
You and me in law school, a couple of years, we start Christensen and Jones.
I thought about law school at one point in time in my life.
There was it was a brief, fleeting moment of thought, and then I realized I don't want to be in school for 100 years.
I married into a family of lawyers, and so that was a thought.
You wanted to fit in.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. I want to tell you that Ryan White is coming to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. That's going to be next Thursday, May 29th, noon at Home 2 Suites in Springdale. You can reserve your seat now at OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com to hear Ryan White. He's the executive director of the Razorback Foundation. Obviously, a lot of interesting things that I'm sure he has to say. A very interesting time for the foundation. I sat down with Ryan earlier this year when they were doing the reseeding plan for Bud Walton Arena, and it was it was an interesting conversation with him. A lot of real insight, I thought, came from that. So if you want to hear him, OzarksTicks.com. You heard John Calipari speak as part of this road show last week, first in Memphis. We talked to you the next day on the podcast. Then you heard him speak in Little Rock. I can't imagine, you know, just having heard him speak before, I would imagine it was probably a lot of recycled material.
Oh, yeah.
On the second night. But as you kind of look back at that now, a week removed from it, what were some of the things that he said that stood out to you most?
I think the biggest thing is just what he said about just having some roster continuity and staff continuity, just how important that is, especially in modern college basketball, just the way rosters turn over. I think that's just the big thing. When you return guys like DJ Wagner and Billy Richmond and Trevin Brazil, even a guy like Jaden Caroletua, who's been in the program and knows what's expected for the newcomers coming in, I think it's big. And you keep the same staff as well, just to you know, continue growing and continue building what they're trying to build. I think that's something he's very excited about, and I think is something that's very valid to be excited about. So I think that's the big thing. He touched on some schedule stuff, obviously. You know, he mentioned, you know, potentially playing an exhibition in Memphis, you know, for St. Jude's, which, you know, maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't. He said he wants you know, his guys from his time at Memphis to be honored in some way to do that, and he said he would be greatly interested in it if that were the case. So we'll see about that.
That's one of those that sounds like we'll have my people call my people.
Yeah.
See if we can get this done.
Yeah. No, that would be a lot of fun. You know, I like I said last week on the podcast, I always enjoy going to Memphis. I think it's a fun town. Yeah, you know, I'm not sure. I've come to find not everybody agrees with that opinion. So sorry everybody, but I like Memphis, so I wouldn't say no to a trip to Memphis for you know, a game, for especially to go to.
It's a good facility. Yeah. FedEx Forum's a really.
I've never been to FedEx Forum, so it'd be fun.
I went there. Yeah. I watched the most atrocious defensive game of NBA basketball.
Yeah, you were seen. Watching the Raptors?
The Raptors.
Oh,
and
yeah, the Raptors were trying to get in the Cooper
Grizzlies
Flag sweepstakes.
On throwback night. So you got the Grizzlies wearing these Bryant Reeves Big Country era uniforms that they wore up in Vancouver. I even got a cup that night, like this retro cup. But my son wanted to go see an NBA game, so took him over there, and I think the final score was like 155 to 129. I looked at my watch after the first quarter, like, my God, I've been sitting here for 50 minutes. This thing is going to go over 3 hours. And but it's a nice facility.
Yeah. But he also mentioned, obviously, and he mentioned this in New York last year, he wants to get back to New York, so we'll see about that. And then he did say there will be a New York game, so I don't know if that's just him speaking it into existence or if there's something.
He was struck
there.
By how many people showed up from Arkansas to that game last year at the Garden.
Madison Square Garden. I was struck by it. You know, and I
it
mean,
felt like a home game for Arkansas against Michigan.
It did. No, I loved Madison Square Garden had been a bucket list item for me. So I enjoyed it, and I stayed with a friend in New York who was gracious enough to let me sleep on her couch. So shout out Katrina if they're back and, you know, we'll be making the trip
again. Can I just point out, we were going to buy Anthony a hotel room. This was his, like we aren't going on the cheap here to New York. This is Anthony saying, I got a buddy.
I'm aware, yeah. All right. Pardon me for wanting to see my friends.
Yeah, well, we just need need to point this out.
No, it's fine. I appreciate it. Yeah, you know, I always enjoy staying with friends and seeing them, catching up and all that, not to get too sidetracked, but that would be interesting. I went on the, I got bored yesterday. And so last year,
to me.
Last year, that first weekend of November football bye week, that's when they played Baylor in the neutral site. So mm-hmm. last night, I went and looked at every non-SEC Power Conference football schedule and comprised a list of schools that have bye weeks that same weekend. And I'm going to pull it up here if I can.
As you pull it up, I'll just say I don't think that they played Baylor in Dallas because it was a football off weekend. But I think it just it worked out that way.
Yes, but it was also a bye week for Baylor that weekend. Okay. So I'm maybe it played into it, maybe it didn't. I don't know if you've seen Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
What did I tell you earlier? I shut down many years
ago.
But
I'm like at the board like drawing lines that probably don't exist. Yeah. I'm like going crazy. But so let me be abundantly clear. This is not intel or anything. This is me being stupid. November 8, football bye week for Arkansas also lines up with Georgia Tech, Pitt, Virginia Tech, Arizona State, Baylor, UCF, Cincinnati, Houston, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, Illinois, Michigan, Michigan State, Minnesota, and any non-football or non-UConn Big East schools and Gonzaga. So I'm
so what he's saying is Arkansas is going to play UCA that weekend at Bud Walton Arena.
Probably.
They are going to play Baylor next year in Fayetteville.
They are going to play Baylor in Fayetteville.
That would be a great week if they could make it work.
Yes.
We don't know the date yet for that game, but that would be a great week.
He said they're looking for a date to make that work. That would be good.
But we don't know what Baylor's basketball schedule looks like either.
Yes.
But the point being that if you could get a big basketball game in Fayetteville that weekend or at a neutral site, it'd be a good time
to have that. That would be a good time to do it. So that's where that comes from. Whether or not that actually happens, don't know. We'll see. I was bored and decided to have fun, I guess. But
yeah. Any other basketball stuff going on right now that is worth keeping an eye on?
I think it's interesting to see where these last guys in the portal kind of end up. Obviously, Boogie Fland with an Arkansas kind of tie is kind of the last one in terms of outgoing people.
Here's a question. If Arkansas, if one of Thero or Knox ends up staying in the draft, does Arkansas get another player out of the portal? Or is it a situation where they're expecting Thero to be gone and they would only go get somebody out of the portal if Knox ends up staying in the draft too?
I think that's probably where I would lean. It also kind of depends on fit. Like I asked John Calipari about this and I think it was in Memphis or one of Memphis or Little Rock. He says, you know, we're not opposed to going and get some, and this isn't a direct quote, but basically said that they're not opposed to going and getting somebody. It just kind of depends on the fit and how they would kind of go in and not to keep saying the word fit, but fit with the roster, fit with the guys who are already in the building. So I think that's something to look out for. I certainly don't think it's impossible that they go out and get somebody. I think the name that everybody seems to be interested in is Jameer Watkins. How real that is, I'm not sure. He's also in the draft process.
And so he is. For people State. Who don't know.
He's from Florida State, okay. Kind of that 3-4 kind of range. So obviously they went out and got Malik Ewan from Florida State, so maybe they got an in there. He's also in the NBA draft, so maybe he stays in, maybe he doesn't. Whether or not, if he doesn't stay in the draft, he's also in the transfer portal. So, you know, does he end up at Arkansas? Who knows? But I think that's something to watch just in general, not necessarily just for Arkansas, but you've also got some other guys who are in the draft as well who are also in the portal, a guy like RJ Lewis from St. John's. You know, where will he end up? I don't think he fits in for Arkansas stakes or Arkansas's fit. Just I don't think he fits into the play style per se. But, you know, just speaking for basketball in general, I think those are some interesting things to look out for, and I'm kind of intrigued by this kind of trend of players who have played professionally overseas who are now coming over and playing college basketball because it wouldn't have been allowed, you know, like 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's an interesting one, and there is an Arkansas angle with that as well with Kareem Rattel, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, so I apologize if I didn't, but that's something I'm kind of trying to dig into a little bit because it's such a, you know, huge trend in college basketball right now. Obviously now we've seen it at Arkansas. You look at, you know, Illinois as well with, you know, however many guys they've got, and it's dipping into the mid-major leagues as well. So yeah, it's an interesting trend to follow.
Anthony, good stuff. You can read Anthony's coverage of Razorback basketball on our website at wholehogsports.com. He's going to be out at Bogle Park, too, this weekend, helping Ethan with coverage from the Arkansas-Ole Miss Fayetteville Super Regional that begins on Friday. We appreciate you being with us. Bubba Carpenter is going to join us tomorrow as we look ahead to Arkansas and whoever the Razorbacks are going to play at the SEC baseball tournament. Hope to see you then or at our website. Have a great day, everybody.